doing this. They said when you got here, the whole thing started. I think you're the cause of all this. I think you're evil. Evil!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
I'll follow you through.
Swallow this.
The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you.
Have you ever heard Candyman?
You moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you?
He rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
You don't know what death is.
This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation.
Messenger of God, you do not need to stay here.
God is dead! Satan lives!
It's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
The animals are contagious! What? Fire! Stop! You have no idea!
You're not afraid of the dark, are you?
Whatever you do, don't fall.
It's time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, the missiles are flying.
See me in hell, Mr. Thorne. Hell will shower out our sentences.
I can't lie to you about your chances, but you have my sympathy.
It's still a procedure. It's called making a head on a stick.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains.
There is no one watching out for us, Merrill. We are all on our own.
The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Something in the middle! Shut the doors, my God! You gotta tell them! Silent Green is people!
You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. How was work, by the way?
Good.
Excellent. And we do have a special guest, and why don't you introduce yourself and let us know who you are?
Hi, I'm Daniel Lynch. I've been fortunate enough to join you guys a lot. I'm doing just fantastic, and I hope you all are as well.
Excellent. Dan Lynch is a fantastic actor that does both stage and films. You may have seen him in such movies as Circle, which is probably one of the big highlights of your career. That was a great film, and you were awesome in that film.
And the seven. Oh, I'm sorry, Dan. The Lurking Man was another one.
Yeah,
and the anthology, the seventh.
Patient Seven.
Patient Seven. That was
Michael
it.
Michael Ironside. Yeah. Then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and we Alfie Allen was in that too. We did actually episode. It's on all three of those films, as a matter of fact. And I'm still waiting for Netflix to give me back my money for Circle. Because
Phil, relax.
I know.
It's past. It's over. Grow up. Get over
it. He's cheap.
Well, okay. You know what? I can say whenever it disappears from like one of the places I subscribe, I'll still always have it on Apple. So,
For whatever reason, I hope it's because it's a really interesting film. It's had an incredibly long life on Netflix. I keep expecting it to stop. I keep expecting to not get more comments on it in the Twitterverse. But
right.
every day, there's new people coming onto it and seeing it.
And, Netflix does is a futile task.
Oh my God, I watched this movie five times, or really, really hating it.
Well, I think that it's kind of like the virus thing, which is that the worse a virus is, the quicker it burns through a population and burns itself out. you know, where like subtle things tend to linger forever. I don't think Circle never caught on like Bird Box, right? Where everybody watched it in a week and then they were done with it. You know, so it's out there and it's just kind of lurking for people to find, and they're just going to keep finding it over and over and over again. So yeah, it's just going to keep coming at you forever.
So Michael, are you saying my film is a virus?
Yeah. Well, it's viral.
Yeah. Bingo. Well done, sir. Well played.
And Dan, you posted a week or two ago that you have a role in a different type of movie. What was that one?
I do. And I remember the last time you invited me to come and play. We were talking about the Broad Island Sound.
Yeah, that's right. It was the Broad. Yeah, you're right.
And I know I think I talked about the two small roles I had in First Oscar and in The Right Mom. Yes.
Yes. I remember the first Oscar.
Yeah. And The Right Mom is, which was called Whose Child. It's now had its name changed. Small roles. But then I was really, really fortunate to be offered a lead role in a drama, not often the kind of film that I'm asked to work on, called A Warrior's Soul, directed by Travis Donald, or Donald Travis, or Director Smalls. He actually goes by all three of those names. And produced and written, and the lead across from me is a guy named Edom Atsuswanzi. I had, before, I was kind of hesitant to talk about it just because, you know, sometimes producers and directors don't want you to talk about things that haven't been released. But I spoke with Edom a couple of days ago, told him I was doing this podcast, and he said it was okay to talk about it. So I can tell you guys a little bit about it if you want to hear it.
Yeah,
it's called The Warrior's Soul. I play Dr. Amir Soti, who is a VA therapist, an evaluator, who is here to do a final evaluation on a soldier suffering from very bad PTSD from a horrible series of events that happened in his last operation. And so the majority of the film takes place in just in the therapist's office with us two just talking about, you know, what happened and why he doesn't want to deal with it, and deflections and all those other therapy things. And then it's intercut with a series of events that show what happened. And it's a lovely piece. I was, when I first read it, I was totally surprised because I thought, I don't know, is this going to be an okay film? And then I read the sides and I went, this is pretty nice. I did the audition. They called right away and offered me the role. And I read the full script then and I was blown away. So it's a really amazing script and very interesting and it's very rich. I was very fortunate. My daughter, actually, Raleigh Lynch, my adult daughter, worked with me on it as a dialogue coach. So she was on set every day to just make sure that the dialogue was clean, that the work was clean. And she was in what they call Video Village, watching everything on the monitors. And her help was immense in this film. Just immense.
Nice. It's always excellent. Good to work with someone you can trust.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, that's absolutely right. The trust was frankly, the Edom, wrote it, produced it, and is starring in it. Edom is an astounding actor. He's very present, and working across from him was a joy and a sadness.
Nice, nice. And where can folks find this? When's it coming out? All
that good stuff? It's in post. I think it's probably according to Edom, it's probably going to be sometime in 2022. Not sure when, but it's going to be a while. There's a lot to put together.
All right. Well, when it comes out, you let us know. We'll have you on for the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews podcast, where we do dramas as well and stuff, and we'll talk all about that film.
Lovely, lovely. Yeah. I would be honored.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And if you want to bring anybody else from that film on too, bring them on.
I might bring them both. I might bring Travis and Edom both, if they're both in the mood.
All right, sounds good. And bring your daughter too, so we can hear the war stories.
she's pretty shy about stuff like this. She probably won't come on.
Fair enough. It's all good. As long as we get one lunch. There we go. All right. So we're 7 minutes in, so we'll get into the regular garbage at the end, where you know who we are and all that. But just a quick update again. That's www.darkdiscussions.com is the website. So with that, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we are going to be talking about the 2020 movie that was briefly released in theaters before the pandemic shutdown, starring Betty Gilpin amongst others, called The Hunt.
Sir, how about a glass of champagne?
Perfect.
Put on some weight.
Put him in the back with the rest.
Who's in the shadows? Who's ready to play? Are we the hunters?
What is all of this?
Or are we the prey?
Oh, I can't use that.
Just point and shoot.
Everybody get down!
I know what this is. It's Manorgate. Every year, these rich elites kidnap a bunch of normal folks like us.
Where'd they get you from?
Wyoming.
Orlando.
Mississippi.
This is a real thing. They're hunting human beings for sport.
Then you're not human beings.
Help you?
What state is this?
Most people know where they are.
I ain't most people.
You're in the glorious state of Arkansas, sweetheart. Is there anything else I can help?
How'd you know she was lying?
It's because everyone is lying.
There has to be a reason they chose us.
I'm not going down with that fight. War is war.
You have no idea what you're up against.
This time, they picked the wrong woman. Game of
survival. They're gonna rip you to pieces.
We'll see. This is a wild game of survival.
That's right. The Hunt is a film directed by Craig Zobel and stars, as Eric mentioned, Betty Gilpin, Hilary Swank, Emma Roberts, among others. Each of them have oddly different size roles. The film, as Eric mentioned, briefly came out in the U.S. In the March. It was actually supposed to be Dark Discussions episode back in 2020 at the end, or actually the beginning of March, but COVID hit, and at that time myself and Christy, who's usually one of our co-hosts from Connecticut, decided that we didn't want to go to the film and because of the uncertainty of the pandemic. So eventually it just never was done. And then it was all weird things how to get it on VOD. It wasn't available for a while, or you had to pay $20 for it, and then it just disappeared from VOD for a while, and then finally HBO Max just recently was able to screen it, and that's how we were able to all get to watch it, or I should say myself and I think you, Dan, but everybody else I think has already purchased it and has watched it hundreds of times. So I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with you, Dan. You're the guest.
Okay. I just randomly, you know, came up when I did not know anything about it at all. I had not known about its theater release. Obviously, the pandemic brought all sorts of weird shit into my life. But I saw it on HBO just, you know, and it looked, oh, that's interesting. Oh, Emma Roberts. Oh, okay. You know, so I turned it on and just fell in love with it. Fell in love with it.
Nice. All right, sounds good. What about you, Barrett? How did you hear about this, and what did you think?
I had seen previews of it before it was supposed to come out. Then it got delayed, and then the week that it got in the theater, that's when we had decided we weren't going to go out much anymore. So I decided not to go to the theater to see it, and then eventually I got it on Blu-ray. And I really like this film. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was good.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, for me, yeah, I heard about it because doing this podcast, it was a Blumhouse film, and the word of any Blumhouse film usually comes to our ears. I think we may have even discussed it as a possible 2020 or 2019, what we're looking forward to. In that episode, but yeah, then it got postponed because of, unfortunately, some mass shootings or not mass shootings, but maybe there was some violence that happened in the real world, and so like Jack Reacher from a few years ago, it got pulled and moved to another date, and unfortunately for the film, when it was put to its new date, as Dan mentioned, COVID hit and sayonara to that. So I had heard about it, and I actually only saw it for the first time last night. For folks who are curious, today is August 26, 2021, that we were recording this. So I watched it last night, and yeah, it was good. Basically what Dan and Barrett said, I would concur. So that's my thoughts. Eric?
I don't remember how I first heard about this movie, but this was actually the last movie that I did see in the theater before the pandemic shut down. I actually went and saw it on Friday the 13th when it came out, and really, really liked it. And I was totally bummed that we didn't get to do an episode on it at the time. And we've been trying to find a way to do it ever since, and now we're getting to do it, so I'm happy. So now I get to talk about it with people.
All right. Sounds good. Mike?
I think I first heard about the film because it got involved in a dumbass controversy, because people didn't understand how movies like this work, and they actually believed it was a movie that was endorsing the hunting of people of a particular political persuasion. And that got it on all the news channels because it turned into a clickbaity thing, and the movie got postponed at that point for the second time. And thank God that they did finally make it into theaters because of all the controversy. And then thank God it did make it into theaters for March 13th of 2020. And my wife and I saw it then, that Friday night. By that Friday night, the theaters were already having you sit like every other seat apart or every other row or something like that. They were down to like 50% capacity. And, well, we know what happened after that. So that was the last movie I'd seen in theaters until they started to reopen again, I think in August or September, which for me, a 6-month gap between films is in theaters a very long time. But yeah, I saw it. I got a big kick out of it, and my wife did as well. So so I'm so glad that we finally I've been kind of pushing for us to do it because it's a fun film. And it's a total blast, I think. And I think a lot of people would enjoy it if they aren't little snowflake crybabies.
You know, right, sounds, I gotta yeah, say, go ahead. This is I am not one of those guys who watches movies more than once. I just don't. For whatever reason, there are very, very few movies that I've seen more than once. And even then, it's usually a gap of a really long time before I watch a movie again. This movie I watched the other day a second time just because I loved it so much. So that's pretty high praise for me.
There you go. I forgot to mention the writers, Nick Hughes. And probably well-known Damon Lindelof, who's done a number of television shows and movies, scripts such as Lost and Prometheus and on and on and on. All right. So with that, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. 12 strangers wake up in a clearing. They don't know where they are or how they got there. They don't know they've been chosen for a very specific purpose. The Hunt.
All right, so this is a familiar theme as it started, or probably the most iconic piece is obviously The Dangerous Game, but we've seen it in that Samara Weaving film, couple of years ago. What was that, Eric?
Ready or Not.
Yeah, there you go. And we've seen it in other films as well. The question is, Battle Royale and so on and so forth. But
we actually did a Man Hunting Man episode way back in the day.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Dark Discussions did. So just search for that on
which website. We totally ripped off from Horror Etc., which did their own.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
But and they're not, so haha.
That's right. We've done 500 episodes and been here for 10 and a half years.
And they didn't make it that far. They made it to 3-something, 4-something.
360-something, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Fuckers.
Yep. But anyway, they're Canadians. What do you expect from those people? Anyway, I can say that because my ancestors are half Canadian there. So there you go.
whatever helps you sleep at night.
That's right. That's right. You can bust your own people, my friend. You can bust your own people. this film here, that was a pretty good wiki, I think. I think that was a fair wiki. The title alone gives you the idea and all the material about the film. I mean, everybody knew what it was about because of the controversy, as that Mike kind of alluded to. And so I think that wiki is fair. All right. So as folks that have listened to this podcast before, we don't just review films on this podcast. We critique and dissect. So in a little bit, we'll throw up a spoiler and we'll talk about anything and everything that fits our fancy. But before then, we can talk about general things, whether it's the controversy, whether it's Lindelof and his career or whatever. Whatever anybody wants to talk about that's not spoilery. Anybody want to begin? Anybody? Anyone?
Yes, me.
Go ahead, Art.
Betty Gilpin is a national treasure, and she should have more lead roles.
Well, you know what? I think this was the film that probably put her on the map, right? I mean, because of this film,
no,
why
she got Glow.
No, but wasn't Glow after this film?
Glow was before. At least the first season of Glow was before, and I'm going to second Eric on this.
Third.
Rumor has it, Phil, that you have not seen Glow.
That's true. I've not.
That is a sad rumor, because Glow is just it's something that you are going to just love. I promise you.
Oops. So
go find it and go watch it. And Betty Gilpin is equally brilliant in that, in a very different kind of a role. Very.
Is she the lead in that television series?
She's one of. Yeah,
she's one of the main characters. Okay. I don't think there's a lead. If there is a lead, it's not her, but she's like the co-lead, I guess.
Right. It's
I think that's a good description.
All right, it's cool. Yeah, she's pretty good. First time I've ever seen her in anything was as a supporting role in the film Tomorrow War, and she was good for what she had to do in that film.
Yeah, but as much to do. Yeah.
Exactly. So here she is essentially the lead, even though you're not sure until a little later in the film because of the interesting opening first act. And then, like you guys said, I know she became a big star because of Glow.
She is just brilliant in this film. She is on so many levels brilliant.
There are particular moments I'd like to highlight, but I'll do a post spoiler.
Yeah, yeah, save it for the spoilers.
I would concur. It's interesting too, is because if you look her up in Wiki, IMDb, or any biography of her, she's a New York City native and Episcopal. And here she plays what we would call a Southerner, probably of Scottish ancestry, and therefore like Presbyterian or Baptist. So it's definitely interesting role, similar to like Jennifer Garner. I think that's her name, right? Jennifer Garner, the woman from Ozark.
Alias.
Okay, Alias. Then it's not Jennifer Garner. It's the curly-haired blonde woman
what's
her name?
Her last name is Garner, but it's not Jennifer Garner.
Right. So that act. Too. That's another one that came from New York City and plays a person from a different place. Yeah, what was that?
Julia Garner.
Yeah. So, I would concur that she just becoming the type of character she is in this, which is completely different from her background, is amazing.
As a person who's done a lot of dialect work and really has worked very hard on dialect work, her dialect is 100% perfect.
Just right. Yeah.
Down the line.
And she nails this role.
She nails it.
Yes, she does. Let's see. Any other items that anybody want to talk about that's not spoilery?
I will say that, for this one.
I will say this. I did say, you know, that precious little snowflakes may not like this film. The only other group of people that might not like the film are people who are sensitive to, I don't want to say necessarily extreme violence, but...
Oh, I'd say extreme violence.
Oh, I would definitely say extreme violence.
Well, I guess it depends. Yeah, if you do not like violence, if you do not like... yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, if you do not like violence and bloodshed, this may not be the film for you. It is definitely a satire. It is definitely a biting political satire. I remember kind of being, if you're worried if it's aged well, yeah, it's just as relevant now as it was a whole, 13, 14 months ago. because the internet is still a thing. And that is really what it is criticizing, I think, more than anything, is the internet and people's interactions on social media.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. It is 100% a comment on the tweet bites of the world.
Right. And it hits both sides, to borrow a line from our former president, I think, with both barrels.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
When I saw this on initial viewing, I was not expecting the amount of humor.
It's so funny.
Movie.
Oh, it's hysterical.
It's so
really
many great
dark
lines.
Humor, but it's humor nonetheless. So I was very surprised to find myself laughing in the theater when I went to see this the first time.
I will concur with Mike. Yeah, the first act is extremely, extremely violent, and I may have felt a little bit like, I guess, you, Eric, with the movie A History of Violence. It made me uncomfortable at first, but then as it became more satirical, the violence, I was like, okay, I get it.
Oh, the scene with the grenade, I thought,
yeah, that
was hysterical.
Well, I was thinking about the woman in the spike pit.
Yeah, the first or second time.
To be honest, yeah. So there was some interesting things that made me be okay. All right, I see where they're going. So
even from the very very beginning, and I'm talking about the very very beginning of the film, so you can't really count that as a spoiler alert. The very beginning of the film, where you're just seeing all the text. That basically the setup of the whole fucking film, where you see the series of texts that lead us up to the concept, and then immediately go to the scene in the airplane. Those two scenes together, right from the beginning, just totally captured the quality of what this film was about.
Sure, sure. It is a weird film because if we look at critical ratings and whatnot, it's getting mixed reviews. Why that is, it could be partly to similar. Yeah, well, I was going to say similar to what I've said numerous times on this podcast, as well as the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews podcast, which is and actually the Stand podcast and the Lovecraft podcast we did, that critics are now judging material based off of the framing of their beliefs rather than whether or not a film's good or not. I feel.
Yeah, I know if this movie came up unrelatedly on Facebook, and a Facebook friend of mine who will not be named said I couldn't fucking stand that movie. He basically turned it off after like the opening scene, and it's like, okay.
Well, you didn't really see the movie, did you?
Well, no, he didn't really see the movie, but I can tell you from his Facebook post, he is of a very, very left-leaning persuasion, and I don't think he had a sense of humor about where the film was going, and I think he made assumptions as to what the film was going to be saying.
Now, let me ask you this, Mike. What did you think of Get Out? Because I would see him probably complaining about that film, too, maybe?
I have no idea.
Fair enough. Both the audience scores and the critic scores for this are around 60%. So this is one film, oddly, that both the audience and the critics seem to agree upon. Even though the folks that we talk to, Dan and the rest of us on social media, appear to like this film. Again, though.
Well, that's because we're the best.
There you go. There you go. What else? Anything else that we want to bring up? Go on, Jen.
The level of performers that they got in this film should tell people something. I mean, you've got Amy Madigan. You've got, I mean, Academy Award winning actors in this film playing smaller parts because it's very clear that they liked this project and they understood what the project was trying to say overall. And I don't think you're going to get that kind of quality and talent involved in a film like this if it's not a really good film, my opinion.
Yeah, I would concur. I would concur. The cast was phenomenal. I mean, all the people that have the small roles that you actually think are going to have big roles were as good as, I think, our lead.
I don't even remember if Hilary Swank was advertised as being in the film.
No, she wasn't. It was a total surprise for me in the theater.
And I don't know. It was obviously very, very intentional. And I don't know if this, I don't want to throw this out if there's no spoiler out there, but the way she finally really appears in the film was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When you really know it's Hilary Swank, I thought that was very interesting what they did with that.
Yeah, because her character through the first couple of acts, you only see her lower body or her head from the behind
the
or
back
something
of her head. That's right.
Yeah,
she's Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget, right? You know, she's just
interesting. Right.
Yeah, and it was only at one point once you I mean, even I didn't know that was her character. I kept on waiting for her to appear, and it was only I think when you were talking about Dan, where I heard her voice and I said, okay, that's who it is. Cause I know Emily, did I say Emily? I mean, Hilary Swank's, voice,
it's distinctive.
Pretty distinct. Yeah. So once I heard it, then I said, okay, I gotcha. But yeah, they really hit it pretty well.
A lesser known actor, but and I've mentioned it recently cause I've been binging the series is, Glenn Howerton, who is from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and also from AP Bio. And he plays a sociopath in basically both of those series. So yeah. he's the first person you see after the text message scene on the airplane.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Right,
with the champagne and the caviar.
Yep.
And it is an ideal role, really, for him. It was nice to see.
He's great.
Indeed. All right. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up that's non-spoiler? Anything? Anyone?
No, I want to get through the spoiler so I can talk
when
I knew I was going to like this movie.
All right. Sounds good. So at this point, we will throw up the spoiler alert because, once again, we critique and dissect films rather than just review. And at this point here, if you have not seen the movie and you don't want to be spoiled, you may want to go check it out before you listen to the rest of the podcast, or otherwise you've been warned. So Eric, what is it? What's going on? What did you want to say?
I wanted to say that at the beginning of the movie, when after the scene on the plane, after they're all dropped off, we start with Emma Roberts' character, right? We're with her.
Yes.
You're like, okay, this is the character we're going to be with.
We know Emma Roberts is going to be in this thing all the way.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
She's a heroine.
This is clearly our main character, and we're going to be with her for the entire movie. And about 5 minutes later, she gets her brains blown out.
All over the guy.
That was the moment where I was like, oh, shit. Anything can happen.
Anything is possible.
This is awesome.
But then. Then she is when she gets shot, she's with Hero character, right? Hero Man. And it's clear Hero Man is going to be now the lead of the movie. And he finds the woman in the pit and he pulls her out of the pit.
Well, they go running off together. They go running off together to under this. Okay, let's step back, Eric. Let's step back for 1 second. So that people understand what's going on. These people wake up And we get this mostly at the beginning from Emma's point of view. They wake up, they're in this field, and they've all got ball gags in their mouth. They've got these gags that are locked into the back of their heads. And they all kind of gather and see each other.
I need to know where I can get those in bulk.
Yeah, I heard you wanted some. I'm going to get some for you there on eBay. They all gather around, and they're all kind of centered around this giant crate. This giant wood crate in the middle of a field. And one guy just goes up, and there's a crowbar on it. And the one guy goes up, and he's grabbing the crowbar, and another guy with the ball is going, "Go away! It's a trap! It's a trap!" The guy's just kind of, you know, gently kind of pries it open, and a pig comes out. And everyone's just looking at each other like, there's a fucking pig in the crate? And then he reaches in and he pulls out this array of armaments, these just massive guns, you know, AKs and hatchets and samurai
katana, yeah,
grenades. And Emma goes to the top of the crate, which they completely ignored once he pulled it off. She sees there's a little envelope there, and she pulls off a key, and the key is to unlock the ball gags. So she unlocks her. She starts helping everybody. They're all unlocking. And they're all gathering
the film.
Yeah. All right. That's the setup. And then they're all gathering the weapons. And then people in this bunker start just shooting the hell out of them. They just start blasting away at everybody at the crate. Now go ahead.
And the first one that gets shot is Emma Roberts in the head. Her brains end up on the crate. Happens on screen. Right. And it happens like out of the blue.
The hero guy's face.
Yes. And then hero guy goes running off, and it's weird because we're going to be reviewing a movie for Cinema a la Carte called The Edge. And when Emma Roberts wakes up, she sees Betty Gilpin making, which if you haven't seen The Edge, you may not know what's going on, making a compass out of a needle on a leaf
in the water.
Yeah, she rubs the needle in her hair to get the static and puts it in the water, which I happen to know this. I don't know why I know this, but I know that works.
But you've seen The Edge.
Because I've watched The Edge.
She's making a compass.
But then another thing with The Edge is that is the Chekhov's bear trap, and lo and behold, Hero Man is, after Emma Roberts gets her head blown off, sees a woman run into a bear trap, like into a bear pit, and impales herself. He pulls her out and is helping her. Now, she's impaled. And I'm looking at where there's a spike going through her torso, and I guess,
it looks like it's going through her heart.
No, it was below her heart.
Her heart, probably like through her liver, which the liver is really good at regenerating, so I'm willing to give her, you know, give the possible that she's at least not going to die instantaneously. And they, as they limp off, you hear a click, and he steps on a landmine.
And this is the guy you knew was going to be the hero.
Right. Yep. And it blows up. And the best part is, it sends a woman flying back into the bear pit.
Okay, let's remind people right now, this is a very, from the standpoint of gore, it is a sick movie. It is sick. It is, if you're not willing to laugh at the bitter sickness of this, of what you're going to, then it's not the movie for you. Definitely not. Mm-hmm. It is very funny, but it is very sick.
But I think it's fair to say if you are a horror fan, you have probably seen worse gore.
Oh, my God, yes. If you've seen Night of the Living Dead, you know.
But if you are a normie, this may be shocking. This is not like RoboCop levels, but it's got some pretty intense. Like, my mother would not be able to watch this movie.
Okay, I just wanted to say that because you're about to talk about the girl.
So, and then the girl, you know, somebody comes to help her out, and she just takes the gun from the guy and shoots her. She's like, "Shoot me." And he's like, "No, here," reaches out, and she grabs the gun from him and kills herself.
Well, the reason that she says shoot me is because her entire half of her bottom half of her body is gone, and her intestines are hanging out.
And she's impaled again.
And she just says, "Shoot me." And the guy says, "No, you can make it. You can make it.
Yeah.
she says, you pussy. And she grabs his gun and takes care of herself.
And by the way, Emma Roberts' character doesn't even make it long enough to introduce herself. Her character name is Yoga Pants.
Yes.
And the girl who dies in the pit is Sexy something? Sexy Girl?
Yeah, she's, what is it, was it? Dead Sexy.
Yeah, Dead Sexy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the guy that Dead Sexy steals the gun from is the new lead character, because he's the guy that leads the four people towards the forest. And one of them is this
right,
older
and Phil,
guy.
Don't they call him something like Vanilla something or
Vanilla, yeah, Vanilla Nice?
Vanilla Nice. That's it.
He's the wannabe. Yeah, exactly. The guy from Orlando. Yeah, right. That's the guy. Yeah. And so, yeah, so another guy out of those four, he gets taken out by crossbows or longbows or something. And then the other three make it to a gas station. And to their surprise, they're in Arkansas, because that's what the convenience store gas station older couple say. But at this point,
this is Amy Madigan is the woman in the owning the store, the convenience store, the Academy Award winning actress, Amy Madigan.
That's right. From probably best known for Field of Dreams, which has been in the news recently.
I used to wait tables with her.
Oh, how about that? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And for folks who don't know, Dan also babysitted Helen Hunt.
That's true.
And I was going to say, I know the actor who is her husband. They have names, but I think they just refer to them as Ma and Pa in the
yeah, that's correct.
In the credits,
yeah, Mom and Pa. Yeah, so that's Reed Bernie, right?
Yeah. So I know the actor who plays Pa. I've seen him before. I just don't know what I've seen him in.
Right.
Oh yeah, very recognizable character actor.
Yeah. And so we eventually find out that happens is she sees they're upset because obviously someone's trying to kill them. They want to get help.
They call 911 and all that.
And call 911, and if you know anything about 911, it does not sound like a normal 911 call.
I love that 911 call. I loved that 911 call. I'm sorry, I can't understand you. You're saying what?
Well, and it's funny because I just saw someone post a thing on Facebook about like what the people from 911 want you to know, and like one of which I think was, we can't trace your call. You know, it's like, you know, we can't track you to like, you know, where you are normally. You know, you have to tell us where you are. And so he says, just trace my number, and he says, yeah, sure, that sounds that's a good idea. Yeah, we'll do that. Hang on. So Ma or Mom, whatever, sees the new lead with a gun and asks him about it being safe. He says, I know what it's doing. I've got seven guns, and can't help herself. And, well, why do you need seven guns? And kind of betrays herself there, that she isn't the nice little old lady from Arkansas, as they start arguing over gun rights. And says, well, I guess the people hunting you are just exercising their, you know, Second Amendment right, too. And they pull out shotguns and they kill them all.
they do the gas, dude. They do the gas. Now, first, one of them starts choking on the poison donut. And then they throw the gas.
Right. And then... And then if you're at all unsure where this is going, because now they're leaning into it, it's the conversation between the husband and wife. And because the husband grabs a soda out of the freezer, out of the refrigerator.
She's
like, don't drink it, it's poison. And he's like, oh my God, you poisoned the soda too? He says, no, it has sugar. It's got 42 grams of sugar. Oh my God. And I don't remember why it came up. So, there was something about black people. Oh, that was what it was. It says, and they said, oh, you know,
He said something about those people.
Right, they drag the bodies in the back. She notices the guy with the gun had a wedding ring on, and she starts to feel a little bad. And the husband says, "Oh, he's a monster. He probably says the N-word in public on Twitter." And somehow that becomes, and she's and he's used the word "those people," and the wife gets upset over him saying "those people."
And he goes, "Blacks." You know what?
I'm sorry, black people.
All right, and it's supposed to be African American.
They said, "So you're allowed to say black now again. If black is okay, well, who said so? NPR. And who are they? Mostly white people. We are the worst."
And if anyone doesn't understand the theme of this movie by this point, this really is not a movie for them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and the truth is, you know, I do know people, some people who are on the left who are also, who honestly are, I've gotten kind of a little sick of NPR at this point because they have gone so far bending over backwards in terms of wokeness, political correctness, whatever term you want to use for that. And yeah, so it was, it's hysterical, and it kind of goes like that. We get another scene with that at the beginning of the, I guess, would be the third act.
If this film was made today, they would have added Latinx, but this movie was before Latinx existed. You know, so
well, do they even acknowledge the existence of Latinos in this film?
No, they don't.
But yeah, they do Muslims and they do blacks and obviously the very worst white people.
I have to bring up the Jewish. They bring up too, because
mention the Jews. Yeah, the two Jews who brought down Nixon.
Yeah, they do.
There's two Jew boys who brought down Nixon. I believe the exact quote.
He's like, oh my God!
So
that guy may have been a plant. So we don't even, you know, he could have just been faking it. And it sounded so stupid.
I don't think it was. But yeah, so the whole
an interesting question. When we get to that scene, I want to talk about it. But it's
me too. That's way in the back. But yeah, so if for some reason you're not picking up, so the idea is that you have a bunch of, shall we say, red state people being hunted by blue state people.
I think that's a good way to put it.
I think it might be the safest.
Funny. Out of all the red state people, again, a lot of them didn't make it long enough to see if what they would say, but only two of them actually say things that you could argue are politically incorrect. And it's always the progressive side or the hunters that are the ones that are saying all the stupid things, if you notice in this film.
Well, yeah, it depends on, like, there are going to be people who simply object. Like Emma Roberts, I don't know what she said online to get herself there. But when this guy that we later learn is Don, with quite like three question marks after his name, is how he's credited. tries to give her a gun. She like refuses to take the. She says, I can't use that. She tries to refuse to take the gun. So she's not a completely stereotypical red stater. And Don just like holds. He says, "You got a finger?" And wiggles his finger. He's like, "Can you do that? And you can use it." And hand makes her take the gun. It is leaning into the stereotypes. And so some people, just the fact that you're willing to own a gun would be an absolutely horrible thing. You can certainly get into the stereotypes that are there.
Mike, that 911 caller, the guy that made that call, didn't he say he was from New York?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a New Yorker, Orlando.
But he's also all red and blue. It's like he's a gun owner. He's an NRA guy. Clearly.
Right. I don't want to tell you the conversation. I'm in New York. I don't want to tell you the conversation I got stuck having with my crazy next door neighbor.
that's the guy that tells you to fuck off all the time when you.
No. He seems to be a nice guy.
He's not the shoveling guy.
He's not the shoveler. He might be the. Well, I only say he might be the shoveler because I don't know that he's in his right mind. In this, the conversation, he did drop an N-word, but because I really am not certain of his sanity, I just kind of smiled and retreated back into my house. There was one time when I was out shoveling the snow in the middle of a snowstorm, and he was shouting out and calling me the N-word. Somebody was next door.
Apparently he needs his eyes checked.
Well, the good news is I get to keep that in my back pocket if someone ever says, "Yeah, but you don't have to worry about somebody calling you the N-word." I can go, "Wait a minute."
That happened.
That actually happened.
Now, for those so he called you that word?
Yes, he called me that word.
I was called that word too. I live in an Irish town. Believe me, I got called everything.
Yeah, but the difference is, Phil, I am whiter than mayonnaise. So
that's true. It's huge. I could pass off as a minority. You could not. That is true. That's a fair point, Mike. Well played. Yeah, yeah, Mike, you're as white as can be.
Yeah, just about.
If your last name was Webster, I would say you're a Mayflower person.
Yeah.
Hello, last name Webster.
That's right.
And I my family tree, yeah, actually had ancestors on the Mayflower.
There you go. So where were we? Yeah. So we were just talking about general things that people have said stupid in the film. People have said, you know,
so we were talking about the scene in Ma and Pa's, and that ended the way it ended. And then we're Brady Gilpin comes back into the picture.
Right.
So yeah.
And I would say this is about where Act Two starts.
I would agree. Yeah. That is,
it's either here or at the end of the gas station scene. One of the two.
Oh no, I think it's here. I think Act Two begins with the second she walks in that door. Well, you know, it's interesting because this is another thing we should introduce, which is the character who we now know as Hilary Swank goes by, what is her name? Something with
Athena.
An A. Athena. She goes by Athena, or her real name is Athena. And we hear a conversation with Athena and Ma and Pa after they've killed the three others over a radio. The portable radio of some sort, and Athena is going, did you get him? Yeah, no, we got three. We got this guy, and they all had their nicknames. We got Vanilla Nice and this and blah, blah, blah. And she said, okay, well, Snowball is coming your way, so get ready. Do you need more time to reset? So they got to clean up all the blood, and they got everything all back neat and order and back before she shows up.
Right. So they've nicknamed the Betty Gilpin character as Snowball.
Correct.
For a very specific reason.
And they also refer to Orville and say, who's Orville? Not Orville, Orwell. And Orwell is the pig. So
Orwell
if,
is the pig.
Right. Yep. So yeah. If for some reason you failed high school English, this is Orwell is clearly referring with a pig that is clearly referring, and Snowball is clearly referring to Animal Farm.
That's right. George Orwell, Animal Farm. That's correct. Yes.
And in fact, before shooting the guy with the gun in the gas station shop, Mom says a quote from Animal Farm, which is, will there be sugar after the revolution? Which is a line that the White Horse, I can't remember her name, the mayor says, like, after the, can we still have sugar after the revolution is over?
I did not get that reference.
I had to look that one up. I'm not going to lie. I love Animal Farm, but I've not read it in 20 years. So.
Yeah, and I haven't read it in 40 years. So there you go.
Yeah. But she says it to Napoleon, the pig Napoleon.
Right. Well, because she's obtuse. She's the person who's like, has it good and doesn't realize she's going to lose everything once the revolution ends.
Right. She's the ones that they use to get to the revolution to be over. And then those people get, yeah. Just ask all the people in Cuba. Yeah. That's all.
Yeah. She's one of those people that has everything, but for some reason, you know, is dealing in resentment politics. And
Right. Well, and also, yeah, you know, the mayor is in the book is, you know, is lied to, right? They're promising that, you know, things are going to change and whatever, and then it's just replaced.
There will be sugar after the revolution.
Another dictator, yeah. So yeah, it just ain't going to be for you. So they named their characters.
So now Betty Gilpin is showing up. She walks into the store.
Let's get into this part. Yeah. So this part's really good. Barrett, explain it since you're being quiet.
When they walk into the store. When she walks into the store?
Yeah, come on.
I'm paying attention.
Very quiet, Barry.
So she walks into the store and approaches the store owners and asks for some cigarettes. She's definitely got a kind of suspicious look on her face. And she starts talking to the owners, and she becomes more suspicious as they talk. And eventually she jumps over the thing and grabs their shotgun and shoots and kills them both. And she ends up saying that it was because of the cost of the cigarettes was what gave them away.
Right. Yeah, they said they're in Arkansas.
They are. They say, well, we're in Arkansas, honey. You're in Arkansas. How could you not know where you are?
Yep.
And then she says, in Arkansas, cigarettes are this much.
And right, then he asked him for one cigarettes.
Of the best lines of the movie when she leans down the lady and goes, "You fucked up, bitch!"
Bitch. She has some great facial features too when she does a lot of this movie.
Oh,
great faces.
She has a line, or technically two lines, I guess, at the end of the film, near the end of the film, when she's talking to the advisor, and
where she
doesn't speak a word and just gets a look on her face.
Yes, Barrett, you're 100% correct. The looks that she does throughout the film, the when she has no lines at all, just what she does with her face. Because
there's something off with this character.
Yeah.
And given what we find out about her, I'm guessing maybe some kind of PTSD.
Well, when she's telling that story of the jackrabbit.
That is my favorite scene of the movie.
Yeah, she's got the 1,000-yard stare right there. And you just see that.
Fucking demented version of the tortoise and the hare.
she's very calm. The whole film.
Like, she's telling the normal story, but hers is the fucked up story.
And, you know, I notice things cinematically sometimes. And one of the things that in the second viewing of that particular scene, Barrett, where she's telling the jackrabbit story, which is the tortoise and the hare, for those who weren't catching that, it is the camera pushes in on her as she starts to tell the story, you know, gets kind of close on her. But then as she's moving through the middle of the story, the camera pulls away from her. It was a great cinematic choice, whether it was the directors, the DPs, but the fact that she's got this 1,000-yard stare and she starts this story with the camera pushing in on her, and then it pulls away from her. And it pulls away from her as she gets into the meat of the story, and then only pushes into her at the very, very tail of that.
I'm watching it right now.
Cinematically, it's brilliant.
It's interesting because we don't get a lot of her background, but from what she says and does, we get so much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that story makes it sound like she's a nihilist in a sense, because basically it's a bastardization of the tortoise and the hare. And basically, for folks who are familiar with it, basically the hare beats the tortoise in a race, but one day they're racing and he decides to take a nap and the tortoise wins because he doesn't wake up in time. Her versions of that is the hare still will win, or because what happens is the hare, in this case a jackrabbit, goes to the house at night and blows away the tortoise and all his family.
Well, actually, first she talks about the fact that the tortoise is there celebrating his victory with his whole family, all his tortoise little children, his tortoise wife. They're all having a nice meal celebrating their victory. And then the jackrabbit comes in, kills all of the children and the wife.
With a hammer.
And then sits down and eats the food.
Makes him watch, though, first, as he kills them all.
Because Jackrabbit always fucking wins.
Right.
Jackrabbit always wins.
The only thing that wasn't added to that story was the Jackrabbit doesn't piss on the bodies as he walks out.
Well, and it's followed up by Chris Lott that just made me laugh so hard, because she starts the whole thing with, "My mama used to tell me this story," and then she goes through this whole story with this fucked up ending, and then the guy she's telling this to just goes,
"Don,
your mama told you that?"
Yeah, Don. And then he goes, who's the jackrabbit in the story? Are we the jackrabbit?
Yeah, I know. I love that.
Right. Yeah. Because you really don't. I mean, I honestly wasn't sure who she was referring to as the tortoise and the jackrabbit anyway. So I didn't get it at first, except that.
At the end, you do know.
Yeah. At the end, you do. Yeah. So, her character, her character kind of reminds, it kind of reminded me of, speaking of a film I just mentioned earlier, Eric, History of Violence. It kind of reminded me of Viggo Mortensen's character in there, where, you know, he just looks like a normal person, but is trained to do all these kills and martial arts and all that stuff. And her character is kind of like that. She's like actually trained. And mm-hmm. so you figure that she must have some sort of military or something background.
Well, she says, later on she says she served in Afghanistan, but you get the sense that she was special ops.
Yeah, yeah. But
she's a killing machine.
Yeah, there was no way that a normal person could have probably done what she did to take out the elderly couple, even if they were an elderly couple, because of their advantage in that situation. But but because she, as we find out later, she's a veteran in Afghanistan, oddly in the news today, has a lot of skills that a normal person wouldn't, and probably
she has a certain set of skills.
Yes,
indeed. What's that from, Mike? Is that from the movie?
Taken, right? Right. So,
that's Taken.
So. So she becomes the lead character, and people come in and out around her from who was it? Was it Gary? Was the first guy?
Yeah, Gary shows up right after she kills Ma and Pa, and she hears the radio. She hears Athena on the radio, and she gets a radio, and so she's listening in on Athena's conversation about Snowball, about her being Snowball. And then she asks, then this guy comes looking for her. There's a drone. He says, yeah, I'll check it out. I'll go see. And he sends a drone in to look around and see if he can find her. And then the drone gets shot out of the sky suddenly. And then, she noticed earlier there's a truck with an Arkansas license plate. And then she pulls off the fake Arkansas plate and sees it's some kind of a European plate underneath it. And then she looks at the truck and she sees that there's a thin filament line that leads underneath it to a package of C4. So she knows the truck's rigged. If you try to take it, you're going to get blown to smithereens. And so she's hiding in the bush when she sees the drone get shot out of the sky. And this other guy, Gary, shows up and he's trying to open up the truck. He gets, and she whistles at him and they have a confrontation.
Right. And basically, he thinks she's one of the enemy, but then when she tells him, don't open the door, there's a bomb, and he sees the bomb, they're cleared, and they both know that they're part of the two people that are being hunted. But the difference is that she's a military-trained individual, while he is...
an idiot?
Yeah, that would be.
He is a podcaster, or no? Is what that?
Yes, that, no, he's right.
Yeah, he is a podcaster. He's a podcaster.
A very, very red state podcaster.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and what we would call a not
conspiracy theorist.
Well, I'm just trying to think.
He's very Alex Jonesy.
I don't know.
Rush Limbaugh, but
I don't even know what type of the podcast. Yeah, I mean, he must be a conspiracy nut one. I don't think he would be a mainstream one or anything. But
that's probably true. Yeah.
Hang on. Let's just get a little bit further. The two of them take off, and he's pretty much following Betty Gilpin.
Thank you for saving me, Eric, because I can't get into that, what I wanted to say. I just can't say it. All right.
And so the two of them end up on train tracks, and eventually a train comes along, and they decide they're going to catch a ride on it. So they get up into the car, and there's a refugee family in this car.
Crisis actors!
How they're crisis actors, and Crystal's basically like, what is wrong with you? Kill a baby. He's like, there's crisis babies.
I love that scene.
That's probably one of my favorite
band names calling it.
That's a great one.
Well, then, yeah, and I mean, then it turns out that he's fucking right.
About one of them.
About the lead guy who's speaking all the Arabic, and talking to him in Arabic and Arabic and Arabic and Arabic. They get off the train. The train stops in this camp, this refugee camp, and the refugees are all pulled off. And she tells the idiot Gary, hey, put your gun away or you're going to get dead. And they all come out. And then the guy who's been speaking nothing but Arabic leans to him and goes, yeah, you're right. I'm a crisis actor. And
the guy from Connecticut.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. He's from Connecticut. It's awesome. Crisis Mike. That's awesome.
Crisis Mike.
That was awesome. He's probably like from Greenwich or something. You know, some of those wealthy towns, a prick. But
be cool, Gary, and we'll all get through this, okay? And then I'll give you like a head start, okay?
Well, and that's the thing. It's like you get the license plate, so you know it's a European. That's kind of weird. And then you see the refugees, and it's not South American refugees. So it's like, okay, this has to be Europe. This has to be Europe at this point.
Right.
And then, of course, you get all these soldiers coming out, or police people, or whatever the hell they are, speaking some Slavic language. So it's like, all right, yep, there we go. That's the answer.
Well, and you find out later that one of them was exiled to Croatia because he might have kept his job, but he was exiled there. That's where his job took him.
Yeah, you find that out much later.
One of the hunters, man?
Yes, it's
yeah.
That's why they ended up there.
That's why they ended up there.
For people that don't know Croatia, this is the nation of Bill Belichick's relatives.
Oh, that's true.
So it's a horrible place then.
His grandfather.
Evil people that cheat.
His grandfather came from Croatia. Yep. So he visited it with his son 2 years ago, right before COVID. Yep. It was big news in Boston. Also, the pitcher that used to play for the Kansas City Royals, who was the number one pick, Hacheva. He was Croatian American as well.
Boy, do I not care.
Well, Mike would know Hacheva. Mike would know Hacheva. So anyway, that's the end of my ethnicity about Croatia. But it's funny too, because she says it too. She goes, "Is this Serbia? Is this Bosnia? Is this Croatia?" And then I have to go, yeah, that's it, yeah.
Oh, but wait, step back.
They don't say it. She realizes.
The crisis actor who's been Arabic all along is telling Gary, just be cool. We're going to be fine. And then Gary just freaks out. You see? I was right. He's a crisis actor. And he's trying to tell these Croatians who can't speak any English, look, this guy's a fake. He's a fake. And the actor, the crisis actor, keeps
he goes
speaking
back
in
into Arabic.
What the fuck? And then Gary grabs one of his grenades and he shoves it down the crisis actor's pants.
Yes. but that was before crisis Mike says, hey, just keep it on the down low and then I'll let you get a head start before I kill you.
Right.
And that's when Gary jumps him in it and basically gets the grenade and they blows Christ.
They both blow up.
No, Gary lives. Gary.
Oh, I thought he blew up too.
Oh, Gary went under the train and he ran off into the woods.
Right.
We find out about Gary later.
Yes, he's
indeed.
He's the trunk man with the knife.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So anyway, so she and this Dan, actually just her, right? She gets pulled in and she says she's an American and they say, where's your passport? And she goes, I don't have a passport. And all that.
I don't have.
and then they make a joke to her. They go, are you being hunted? She goes, yeah. Because we have a guy named Dan that says he's being hunted.
Don,
yeah.
Like and, Don. You're being hunted like Don.
Yeah,
and she's just like confused.
She goes, who's Don?
Yeah.
And he goes, go get Don.
And Don is a guy that if you've ever walked into a Walmart, there's three or four of them there. You know, he's got, I think, didn't he have like a hunting vest or a hunting jacket? Yeah. And he's got he's got his military service cap. He's a big guy, older gentleman with a white goatee.
I got all those people around me. They're everywhere around here, which are fine. They're good folks.
What do you mean, those people?
Exactly.
Hey, I'm one of them people now, too. I wear my flannel. I mean, come on. I got my New Hampshire hat that you know, and all that other stuff.
Oh, no, look, my stepfather-in-law, you know, was that guy, and he always wore his his Navy ship hat, you know, and everything. So, So again, he's another one that they're leaning, like the one that doesn't lean into the Red State stereotype probably was Vanilla Nice. Was the white wannabe rapper.
Yeah, the New Yorker.
No, that's the one from Orlando.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Right.
But I don't know, like, the Orlando.
We don't know enough about what the Orlando guy was about. But that's
what he's about, and I don't know that particular stereotype very well, so I have no idea if that's
that's
a subcategory of deplorable or something.
Panhandle, yeah. Oh yeah, the Jacksonville and the Panhandle and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing an anti-vaxxer as well, but
hey. We do know that in New York City, the largest population of people that aren't vaxxed are people of color. So it's a
right. The difference is that 70% of the country is white. And so, like, if you look at the individual populations, like Black and Hispanic are much more likely to be not vaccinated. But right. Because there's so many percentage wise. But when you go by total numbers, it is going to be largely red state white people. As the largest number is because there's so many.
Florida. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
Take a look at the numbers in Florida and Nevada and Utah.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So
that's a very large white population.
Yeah. I concur. Yeah, that's right.
Well, and the funny thing is, though, I mean, you all know Whole Foods, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're aware of the clientele that would shop at Home Foods typically.
You mean Amazon grocery store?
Yes. Well, that's what it is now, right?
Similar, yes.
Well, because I remember watching many years
ago. The people that shop there are a lot of people from my town.
Right. So I remember watching a talk when someone was talking about the anti-vax movement. And
you're going to spend $8 for a bottle of milk? Are you insane?
Yeah, and someone in the audience said, okay, so they have time for questions afterwards. And someone asked a question about, where, like, are the places where you find the most anti-vax peoples? And the guy just kind of looks shuffles a little nervously on stage for a second. He says, well, basically, wherever there's a Whole Foods, that's where you find the anti-vax people. So it's weird because the anti-vax thing has flipped in the last year because it was these quote-unquote liberal elite that were more likely to be the anti-vax people a year ago.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. Yeah.
And it is suddenly flipped on its head. I have a feeling that when you dig down, it probably cuts across populations in general, regardless of your
political opinion. I think that's probably a very true statement, Mike.
It's just that it was the...
What are we talking about now? It's not the movie.
Anti-vax.
Oh, yeah. Were we talking about a movie?
Yeah.
This is not a movie, right?
I have no idea how we got into vaxxing, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm the guilty party on this one. I just made a comment, smart-ass comment, like I do.
It was a good conversation.
So we were talking about she's in Bosnia and they pull Don up and he's got a hood on.
Croatia.
Hood
Croatia.
Off. And she goes, Croatia. Oh yeah, Croatia. I know him.
Don't ever call up a Bosnian a Croatian or vice versa. It's Croatia.
Croatia. Yes. They pull the hood off and she goes, oh yeah, I know him. Yeah. We're being hunted.
Yeah. And so they decide to call the U.S. Embassy. I guess they believe them. Yeah. And the U.S. Embassy comes up to pick them up. And that's another crisis actor.
Or do they? Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So
Barrett, take this one, Barrett. You take this
one. No. I don't remember. How does he give her? So she's sitting. Betty Gilpin is sitting in the passenger seat, and Don is sitting in the back seat. Being obnoxious American guy. And I don't remember how he gives himself away.
He just keeps asking too many questions. So all of a sudden, she's like, and then she kicks him out of the car.
Yeah, he keeps on trying to get them to say why
there must be a reason to be hunted.
Yeah, there must be a reason.
I'm not blaming the victim, but...
Right.
Barrett, I think you're on the money. I think that's exactly what gives him away, is he's asking all – he's trying to get her to say why they're being hunted. What's the reason? There must be a reason. And she finally catches on. She just swivels in the seat and kicks him out of the car.
Well, and this is another one of her quirky little moments because as she makes this – funny face and noise as she kind of swivels towards him.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And then she,
out the door he goes.
Maxie freaking out, like, what the hell are you doing?
She takes control of the car and backs over the guy's head.
All right, but I have a question. Yeah, Don's like horrified. But why is this guy asking all these questions? Doesn't he know Snowball and Don? Doesn't he know who these people are? Or was he like feeling guilty and saying, I got to make sure that these people are really internet trolls?
No, he's trying to get them to see the quote error of their ways.
I agree with Eric. I think that's 100%.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, it's not enough for them to hunt and murder these people. They need them to be trained
before they
die. To feel bad. They have to show their ignorance and be confronted with how wrong they are.
Right. Now, at this point, do we ever find out what Don is wanted for? Because why he was brought there, except that
I think in the fourth act, I don't think he's one of the people they show.
He's not.
Right. Because
he's not in any of the pictures and he's not in any of the meetings.
So we don't know what he is.
Right. So we don't know if he's a plant or not because they don't show him.
Well, there's a moment later on
that brings doubt to his whole role.
Yeah.
And I think that because he's not on the wall, he indeed was one of the bad guys.
I think so too, Eric. I think he was a plant.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know. And that's, like I said, let's save that for the very, very end when we talk about that, because I want to talk about that a little bit more.
Sure.
But we're not there yet.
Right. So this is where
she runs over the guy's head, ambassador who was supposedly taking them to the embassy for safety. She just backs over his head and it just explodes his head. And Don is freaking out. And then she goes to the back of the car. She opens up the trunk. And who do we see there?
Gary.
With a knife in his head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Don, I do. Oh, my God. Who's that? Oh, that's Gary.
And here it is revealed that Betty Gilpin is a gamer. And how do we know she's a gamer? Sure. Because she takes the knife out of his head. She loots the body.
Yep. That's right. Yep,
she knows.
Right.
And then
tells her demented jackrabbit and the box tortoise story.
That's right. And then she sits down on the bumper of the car and she tells the jackrabbit story. That's right.
And she also searches the body of the crisis guy, the fake guy, and finds the map to the bunker.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, and that proves to Don that he was not U.S. Embassy.
And then Orwell comes out of the forest, and she turns to Don and she says,
"That's a pig. You see a pig with a shirt on too.
A pig with a shirt.
You know, that's right. I might ask the question too at that point. Do you see that?
Yeah.
So now they got a map to where everything is.
That's right. Yep. And I think this is the last big set piece before the ending, right?
Oh, mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, this is the setup for the big ending for sure. Well, there's two kind of big endings. You think that the scene in the bunker is the climax, but there's really a much better climax.
Yes. Well, and the bunker scene before the action starts is really, I mean, they spend maybe 5 minutes there before the action gets going.
Yeah, they take time the
bunker. To introducing the characters.
Yeah, with them just bantering, saying these
stupid stuff,
ridiculous woke liberal speak.
Yes, very. It's a very woke conversation, and also it's very clear that they don't like each other.
Right.
Yeah.
They're woke, but they also hate each other immensely.
Well,
one man says, "Hey guys," and the woman says, "What do you mean, guys?" And he's like, "Sorry, I gendered it."
Right. Or as they're going through, so what they're doing is they cut back to basically they were all fired or reassigned. They all got in trouble because the text that we saw at the beginning of the film of them joking about hunting people at the manor had got leaked somehow and has turned on, like, and become like Pizzagate, where some idiot conspiracy theory people grabbed hold of it and ran with it, and they were. As people who get caught being naughty on Twitter do, I was just joking. So the now we've ironically flipped this on the tide where cancel culture was going after the.
Wait, Mike, let me jump in 1 second, because this is a point I wanted to make. This is where, for the very first time in the entire film, 3/4 of the film is gone, at least. And it is the very first time we see Hilary Swank's face.
Yeah, there's 30 minutes, I think, left, I think. I think we're an hour into the film, and there's, because it's only a 90-minute film, so I think
all
we're
right,
in
two-thirds. Our best.
Yeah.
So that finally, we finally see... This was Hillary. Finally, they come around. They do it. They start with the back of her head, and they bring the camera around to reveal, oh, it is Hilary Swank.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a flashback from a year prior to that.
Right.
When all the shit went down and Hillary was asked to leave the company, as was everybody else on that text thread.
And in sort of the flipping the script, sort of like there were certain people who – sort of said, well, if they're going to call us deplorables, we're going to be deplorables. They said, well, they're going to call us redneck hunters, we're going to be redneck hunters. and, you know, it's, then they just decided to lean into it. And therefore, they decided to hunt people for real and round up the people who've cost them their jobs. And they're only allowed to pick 12. Their advisor says don't do more than 12 because it's only your first time. And they're going through the pictures of the different people who have posted online. And they land on the one black guy on the list. And everyone's just like, no. And then someone says, but if we don't include him, you know, it's going to look really bad if we leave him out, you know.
And Hillary next one.
Yeah, exactly. They said they skipped him. Yeah, you're right. Right. Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Advisor, as long as you brought him up, their consultant in that conversation that you were talking about earlier, where they're in the bunker having that 5 minutes of hate. We hate each other so much, right. But we're all very woke. They talk about this guy. He's like hired as a consultant to teach them how to use weapons in military tactics and techniques.
That's right.
That becomes very crucial, and that goes back to what somebody was talking about earlier with Betty Gilpin when she's talking to him at the end there with the faces.
Right. That's right. And I swear, didn't one of them say that he kept on going to Haiti to quote unquote help people? But
yeah,
it was alluded
but he got something pregnant.
Yeah, just going to get women is why they were saying that he's
yeah, he makes a lot, and I think it's Glenn Howard who makes a crack about. So tell me again, you know, why did Haiti need semen or something like that?
Right. He's pretending he's like a Peace Corps guy or something, in reality, a pervert. Yeah.
So it's kind of cut back and forth a little between this bunker scene and the setup scene where they're all picking who's going to be in the hunt, and they get to the picture of Betty Gilpin.
Right, Crystal is the character's name. We find out
Crystal May.
Crystal May something. Yeah.
And Hilary Swank is suddenly like just laser beam focused, and she evidently posted for a site called Justice for Y'all, a Twitter site, where she attacked Hilary Swank's character Athena directly online, saying that she is hunting people for sport and she's a monster and blah blah blah, and Athena, Hilary Swank's character, goes, "That's our snowball."
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and that's how she.
Yeah, I think Justice for Y'all was her handle, her ID.
Oh yeah, that's right, her Twitter handle.
Yeah,
right.
Gotcha. Yeah. Right.
And that's a few nitpicks of the movie, but I'll get to that later.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, interesting indeed. And so then that takes us back to the bunker, and the entrance, and one of the guys has to go pee.
Yeah, the womanizer, Haitian guy, the guy that went to Haiti. Yeah, he went to go pee. I think it was him.
No, it was not him. There was the guy that was making fun of
the other guy. Yeah.
Oh, it was the guy that was making fun of him.
It was the caviar guy.
Right. Yeah. Right, the caviar and champagne, the one who talks about the Piper Heidsieck.
Right.
Which plays at the end.
Right.
Yeah, that was Chekhov's Champagne.
Yep, it was indeed Chekhov's Champagne. That's a perfect description. For people who don't know what Chekhov's gun is.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a running joke on this part.
Yeah, if you don't know what Chekhov's gun is, this is your first time listening to the podcast. But yes, if you introduce it in the first act, you have to, you know, it has to show up in the third act.
Yep.
I think they
show up at the bunker.
Yep. They distract him with the pig.
They all hear this thing and they all go in to grab your arms or the consultant, get ready, you know, get your arms, and they all get into position. They all get their guns and something comes down the chute and they all just blast it away. And it's Orwell the pig.
poor Orwell.
Oh, and I have a question about this. Actually, this is bringing something up I wanted to talk about. Do you think that naming the female character, the one who likes the bow and arrow, who's in the bunker with them, Lady Liberty, they call her?
Yes.
Do you think calling her Lady Liberty is a nod to Betty Gilpin's character, wrestling character in GLOW, Liberty Bell?
Maybe.
I wonder
about
that.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that is interesting.
I wonder, the first time I heard her, I thought, oh, I wonder if she's supposed to be like Liberty Bell. I wonder if that's with a nod there. Interesting.
Given the nature of the thing and the obvious over saturation of American politics, I think it could really go either way.
Yeah, true.
Because it's also would be a name that, you know, I could see, you know, just coming up with for American nicknames.
Right.
I agree. When I heard her name, it struck me because Betty Gilpin was there. And I went, oh,
I'm still convinced A Quiet Place 2, Krasinski purposely had them take the boat in Stamford, Connecticut because of The Office. But anyway.
What? Where are you?
We're talking about nods. Nods to something. I think he's in New Hampshire. A nods, a TV show. A Quiet Place 2 did the same thing. Sorry, I had to get my office reference in at least once.
You didn't have to.
But he did. He sure did.
Hey, I almost got my Taylor Swift one in when Dan was talking about Block Island Sound. I let it go.
I apologize to everyone right now for that.
I did get the Croatian stuff in, though, so that's good. Anyway.
Mercy.
So they blast the hell out of Orwell.
Yeah, the poor pig.
And since they're distracted, that's when Crystal makes her entrance and goes, "Sup, bitch?" and starts blowing them away.
Right. There's
a fantastic fight scene right there in that bunker. That scene was brilliantly choreographed.
There's a lot of great fighting in this movie.
There is, and obviously when we get to the very, very climax, we'll talk about that. But this fight scene in the bunker, the way everyone ends up getting dead by Betty Gilpin's character is brilliant.
I love when the girl shoots the arrow at her, and she's like, "Huh," and she rolls and stabs her with it.
Well, and I particularly like that she doesn't kill her right away, and she's wounded on the floor. And when Crystal says to Don, "Is there anything you want to ask her?" And he's like, "What?" And she's like, "Well, he got all mad at me when I killed the guy in the car because he didn't get to ask him anything. So is there anything you want to ask her?" And he's like, "Well, no." And she goes, "All right." And then she cocks her gun to go to shoot her. And he goes, "You can't kill her. She's a woman." And Betty Gilpin just kind of cocks her head and then turns to Liberty and goes, "Do you think you should be afforded any privilege just because you're a woman?" She goes, "No." She caps her in the head. Fantastic.
It was awesome. Fantastic. And, you know, it's one of those moments you shouldn't laugh, but you have to.
Oh, no. It's
perfect.
It is. But, you know, it's sick. You know, I mean, come on.
But I know what Dan's talking about. You're not supposed to laugh, but it was set up.
Of course. No, you're supposed to laugh. You were totally supposed to laugh.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
But you have to go, "Oh my God, I'm laughing at somebody just got shot there," but it was so funny.
It was.
right. Well, to be honest, though, she deserved it.
And so the only one left alive is the consultant who has been hurt.
Well, wait.
Yes, he's still alive. He's hurt mortally.
Before we get there, Dan, you forgot that there's a, there's an interesting transmission over the radio.
Yes, there is. Isn't that after she has the confrontation with the consultant?
No, I think she gets
the confrontation comes after.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. because I was waiting for her to ask him. I was waiting for her to ask him, and she never does.
Okay.
No, so there's a radio transmission, and it's Athena, and she's talking to Don. She's like, "Did you get her, Don?" And he's like, "I don't know her. I don't know why she's talking to me." And Crystal's trying to get Don to drop his gun, and he won't drop his gun.
Well, they're both pointing guns at each other. As soon as the thing comes on and talks to Don, they're both pointing guns at each other.
So eventually,
Crystal's going to drop the gun, like he's going to shoot her,
and so she takes him out.
Yeah, Crystal's going to drop the gun, Don.
I still choose to believe that he's not a plant,
I don't know what she's doing. I don't know her. I don't know who she is. She's going, "Don, is she dead? Did you kill her?"
Mm-hmm.
And she's going, and Crystal's going, "Drop the gun, Don." He says, "I'm not going to drop the gun. I don't know who she is. I don't know this thing. It's a game. She's fucking with you." and then he pulls up the gun and he goes and he just, and it's clear he's going to shoot her. And she shoots him dead.
Yeah.
Now, all right, let's take a poll here, because Barrett, you said you don't think he was a plant.
I do not.
Okay, so you think he was being set up by Athena?
I do.
Okay, I think he was a plant at this point.
So
I don't. I'm going to agree with Barrett. I think in the final scene with Athena, when they're finally kind of, Athena says something along the lines of, "So, do you think maybe I just set you up with Don so that you would think he was part of it?" And as soon as she said that, I went, fucking Don was not a plant.
Well, and I think the whole question of whether he's a plant or not is the whole point of the movie, how just saying something can cause someone to get killed.
I agree. I very much agree with you, Barry.
That's an interesting take. That's
exactly the point.
What's your opinion, Mike?
My opinion is that if he was a plant, he had plenty of opportunities, I think, to kill her earlier in the film, and he didn't.
I'm agreeing with Dan and Barrett, because why would he have put the pig in and why would he not have killed her after she killed the guy in the car, and he would have not allowed her to kill all those people in the bunker?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But now I'm going to play devil's advocate to myself. But he could very well have been a plant, and Athena could have just been like, fucking with Crystal.
Yep. I see both sides of it, but I choose
to believe that he was that Athena fucked him, and that he used Crystal as a, and I don't think Crystal gives a fuck a rat's ass either way.
Right.
I don't think she cares.
Right. They're trying to kill me. I'm going to kill them first.
That's right. And the bottom line is, she did not shoot him until he raised up his gun and it looked like he was going to shoot her. And that's exactly right.
Yep.
She didn't shoot him because of the words on the thing. But so could he have been a plant? He could have been. I think he may not have been. But I don't think we have
conclusive evidence either way.
And I don't think we're supposed to. We're not supposed to.
It's one of the things I think I like most about the entire film was that line, was what that line said, because it left open so many ethical questions about right and wrong and about actions and reactions and it was a brilliant piece of writing.
Also, it has a good point too, which is, you guys mentioned he was not in the room when they were picking people, but he would never appeared on the screen as one of the people they were picking either.
Right.
Right.
So, and I think
he's purposely ambiguous.
Yeah, I agree.
Although I don't know if that's a thing, because we don't see that until really later. We see that before
the scene. It's kind of intercut with the bunker scene, isn't it?
The bunker scene I thought came after that.
I seem to recall them being in a
So track. I'm just saying, my point is, it's not the kind of thing people would pick up on first watch, but it is a thing that they could definitely have put in there as a as an Easter egg or to confuse people who were scrutinizing it and looking for it. So well, I think
they don't show all the pictures of all the people either.
That's right. They did.
That's on purpose.
There's
as
nine
well.
Pictures on the wall, and there's 12 people that were selected.
Right.
But they showed Gary and they showed Snowball. Did they show anybody else?
Yeah, they had about nine pictures, like Eric said.
I think we're Dan. You're confused because you're thinking of the presentation on in the meeting, and what we're talking about later on in the house. There's a bunch of pictures on the wall. Yeah.
Okay. All right, but either way, he's not.
They don't go over everybody that comes either, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. He's not in the presentation either.
Yeah.
He's not on the wall.
And he's not. And he's not one of the people in the presentation room picking those people either.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, it's interesting. It was I think a brilliant choice to leave the audience going, gee, I wonder if he really wasn't.
Right. So now we get the final chat.
Don't leave the consultancy.
Yeah, that's important.
Oh yeah, that is awesome.
But Dan, you want to talk about this? Go ahead, explain what's going on here.
So then I guess after she kills Don, she goes over to the only guy left alive, who's the consultant. She's mortally hurt. I think she stabbed him with an arrow in the stomach or something like that.
She beat the shit out of him with a pipe.
Oh, with a pipe. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's what it was. She beat the crap out of the pipe, but he's really in bad shape. And so she just kind of, she's got a gun and she kind of.
I think she shot him once too.
Just kind of casually engages him in conversation. Hey, I heard them call you the consultant. Is that right? Yeah. And she gets that wonderful thing. Was it Barrett who was talking about that wonderful thing with these facial expressions? Like she's just thinking. She goes, So you were in the service? I was in the National Guard. Oh, so you're never in the shit. And so, you know.
But he says, I'm in the shit now, though. Right?
Yeah, I was in Afghanistan. So you were never in the shit. So, you know, right then she's been in the shit. And, you know, the reason that she's been so fucking amazing as a killing machine is because of what she had to do to survive in Afghanistan. And, you know, she survived.
Mm-hmm.
She just does. And so she says, so I want you to, you know, tell me what happens next. She says, well, you won. You're alive. Walk away. Just leave. She goes, no, I don't think so. I'm going to finish this. He goes, no, don't go after Athena. I trained her. She's been training for like, what, 8 weeks, 12 weeks?
Eight months.
Yeah, I knew it was some long time. So she's been training for 8 months. She'll kill you. She'll devastate you. She's a monster. Yeah. And then how did she finally come to the decision to kill him? Because she kills him.
Oh, I think she was at that decision when she started talking to him.
What was the last? I can't remember what the very last thing they said was before she shot him.
Well, she gets the information out of him. And about they were talking about being in the shit. He says, well, I guess I'm in the shit now.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
So that's a beautiful thought. Oh, yeah.
That's a nice way of looking at it.
Or a nice way to look at it. Yeah, that was it. Okay.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, she goes, that's a beautiful thought. And then she just shoots him in the head.
And she goes, well, you don't see free service. And
you don't see it. And off. They go out of the bunker and you just see the flash of the shot.
Yeah.
And now we get to the end scene.
And Eric, you were the one that wanted to get to the end scene, and here we are.
Well, it starts with her at the gate of the mansion, and apparently Athena knows she's coming because she buzzes her on the intercom and tells her to put her gun in the mailbox. And she's like, well, I'm not going to do that. And she goes, well, there's a shaped charge of C4 under your feet, and I can just kill you right now. Or you can put your gun in the mailbox and come in, and we can talk. So she does it, and she goes in, and she sees all the pictures on the wall of the people who have already been killed. And then goes into the kitchen where Athena is making a grilled cheese sandwich.
And the
Gruyere.
Heitzik is in an ice cooler. Prominently displayed.
A Gruyere, that's right. Yeah.
Gruyere, yes.
Yeah, some people think that cheddar cheese is in it, but I think Gruyere because the melt.
Yes. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And so Athena lays out her whole thing and about about how it was her fault that she lost her job, and because they made up this rumor that she was hunting people. And Crystal's like, but you are.
She goes, no, we're not. She says, you're in a manor. This is your manor. No, I rented this.
We only did that because of you guys.
Right.
It's your fault.
And then... So, and here's where my only nitpick of this movie really is, which is that Crystal tells her that she got the wrong woman, that there's another Crystal. I forget what her last
Crystal
name is.
Crystal May, spelled with an E.
With an E, or, yeah.
No, I get her mail all the time.
Yeah, the middle name is spelled differently, yeah.
So, and this is really my only nitpick with the film, which is that if they had her photograph from her post, then how could they have gotten the wrong person?
Well, this is what Barrett told me. Barrett summed it up to me this that morning. He said that she was lying, and it was the right woman, and she was swank.
I didn't say that.
I think this is the point of the film, which is that the normal sane people are kind of stuck between the two groups of crazies on the internet.
Right.
I think it's simply the fact that you people don't often put their actual pictures there.
You people.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they tracked down the wrong person for that account.
So they typed in her name as a Google image search and grabbed the first picture they found, and they grabbed the wrong one.
Right.
And I'm going to chime in on this.
Weren't they looking at the actual post in the basement during the meeting?
Yeah, she reads Athena reads the post. Well, yeah, first in the meeting when they're firing Athena, they read the post to her.
Yeah. From Crystal. No, but when they're meeting with the elites, are meeting in the basement with the slideshow presentation.
Right. They read the
slides
post.
Are just pictures. Yeah. They're not the actual posts.
Yeah,
but she's they reading the actual post.
Somebody's right, but it's not. It's not. They've connected it to the picture.
Right. I don't think it's the picture. I don't think it's an original source material that it's just
the screenshot of the post.
If they were going after me, they'd be going after Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift on Facebook.
That's because you don't know how to use Facebook.
they would have just grabbed the first picture, Phil Perrin. He's Taylor Swift. There you go.
I gotta back Barrett and Phil on this one, Eric. I think she told the truth at the end. She's the wrong Crystal May.
I just don't understand how they could have gotten the wrong person.
Because I think if they'd gotten the right person, they would have known she had a military background, that she was special ops in Afghanistan. They would have had all that information. They wouldn't have let this wolf in the fold.
No, I agree. I just don't understand. What I thought is that while they were having that meeting, they were looking at the original post on the screen that included a photo of her.
No, Barrett.
And therefore,
says
I was very confused about how they could have gotten the wrong person.
Barrett's saying it isn't the original post. It was a picture that they grabbed, and then they grabbed the post.
I understand that now.
Okay. Gotcha. But you know what? It also really pisses me off what Athena says about the Crystal May that she thinks she pulled, whether it's her or not.
Mm-hmm.
She rips her into it, like, your father's suicided, your mother's a meth head, and, you know, and all this other crap. You're an orphan at 12. And it's like, maybe these people, and I'm saying these people, Mike, so you can rip me, are somewhat not white privileged, and they have a horrible life, and therefore maybe they're negative people because of that, and maybe you should have some sympathy for them rather than saying, oh, they're just right wing fucking scumbags. Mm. So I felt Athena just showed her true white privilege, if you want to say, or elitism.
Elitism.
No, you're right.
Is the right word, elitism. I think that whole scene was about her elitism. Oh. And how about that elitism could be totally 100%
just the
wrong.
Cheese. Just the cheese was the point of
right.
that.
Not just that scene, but
she didn't like Gruyere because Gruyere tastes better. She liked Gruyere because that's what elites are supposed to do.
Because of the melt.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that scene, Dan. It's really the bookend scenes of the first and last scenes on the airplane.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we should talk about that in a second. But first, we should talk about the best thing about the entire movie.
Just the fight. Fighting.
The fight between Ben Kilton and Hilary Swank was outstanding.
And well, I love how they did it.
Outstanding.
Not the door.
Brutal.
Like they took the film camera, and they would, when they switched between stunt doubles and the real actresses, they just slid the camera between doorways or between cabinets. And then when you came to the out from the behind the cabinet, it's the stunt doubles. And then when you go back onto the cabinet and you come back, it's them again. Mm-hmm. So it was an excellent transition.
It was seamless. And you know, the stunts themselves, throwing through an open fireplace and coming out on the other end of the fireplace, smashing through that glass.
You know what got me the most during this whole fight scene is when Hilary Swank gets the gun and is going up the stairs after her, and they kind of meet on the landing.
Yeah.
And she's trying to reload the gun, and she ends up pinching.
Oh, God.
Pinching her arm.
That's it. Yes. That's so painful. I was going to say that.
And I think part of that is because I actually have a mark on my hand from Scares the Care, because I have these very strong magnets I use to hang things, and I pinched my skin between those two magnets. I think it's a thing that we've all had. Few of us have actually been like stabbed with a knife, so right. We can abstractly understand it hurts, but we've all pinched something.
Yeah,
right. In a way.
So when she knocks that shotgun back and just grabs her skin in her arm, it just squeezes it. It's so painful.
That's like getting stuck in a door or something. I have this lazy man chair that if I close it in my arms at a certain place, it gets pinched, and it's like the top part of your arm, which is like the most sensitive part of your body, and it leaves the biggest black and blue, and I fucking scream when it happens.
That and stubbing your toes, in my opinion, are two of the two most painful things you can do.
Oh, worse.
Stepping on Legos.
Dan, it's worse over here. I've broken my toes at least 15 times because my wife forced me to not wear shoes in the house, so she now allows me to wear Crocs.
I gotta go scrub my brain. I gotta get that image out of my head.
Talk about the movie.
So going back to the movie. So they go smash after glass, just tearing this rented mansion apart. And then they come to the scene where they're about to smash their glass door. And Hillary and Athena, Hillary's like, no more glass. No more glass. And they just walk in the door. I love that moment. And then they're both collapsed on the floor. And she and they go, 1 second. Just 1 second. And then they go, God, I love that scene.
Well, I also love the moment before the pinching when Hilary Swank first grabs the gun and Betty Gilpin goes to run up the stairs. She's like, "Why, you need a gun now, you cheater!"
Well, and I love how they finally basically almost, end the combat is because of a stinking blender blade.
The blender blade from a La Machine, you know, from one of those swirling blender blades.
Right,
and
right.
She says, "I got you. I got you." And they're lying there, and Betty Gilpin's just bleeding out of her gut. And then she grabs Hilary Swank and she presses her into the blade. And she's dying, and she goes, "I got you." And then they have that moment of honesty where they just ask each other honest questions about the realities of what's going.
Right, right.
And that's where Athena goes, did I really get the wrong one? She goes, yeah, you really did.
And
Athena's last words are, whoopsie.
Yes.
I think that was a cheap shot on George Orwell, though, because Hilary Swank's character goes, "He's a racist." And I'm going to fight that one. George Orwell's awesome. Okay. I don't care what anybody says. George Orwell's awesome.
So the guy was writing in the 30s and 40s. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he's a racist, because most people, you'd be really hard pressed to find someone who would pass the race test nowadays.
Well, I do know that he didn't like Scandinavians, because his first name, his real name was like Eric something. And he felt
that's a shitty name that is.
Well, either way, he felt it was too Scandinavian, and he was an Englishman, and he wanted to be as English as possible, so he changed his name to George Orwell.
So, George Webster, do you agree with this? Or?
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest thing about the name Eric is that there's like 17 different ways to spell it.
Right, yeah. Right. And it comes from Scandinavia originally. But George Orwell did not want to be Scandinavian. He wanted to be an Englishman. So another
wonderful moment of when Hilary Swank and Betty Gilpin are both kind of lying there, kind of dying next to each other. Athena makes a smart ass comment about why she says, Betty Gilpin says, why Snowball? Why did you name me Snowball? And Athena makes this smart ass comment about, well, Snowball is a character from George Orwell's Animal Farm. So you wouldn't know that, but you are. That's why you're Snowball. And she goes, I know Snowball.
Yeah, Snowball's an idealist.
And wrong because Snowball's this and that.
And she's like, oh, my God, you read?
Yeah, right.
She goes, of course I did.
She's more surprised at that than the point that she's trying to make.
Yes.
Yeah, so the elitism of her thinking that she's better than Crystal because I can read George Orwell.
Yeah, she must be educated and the other person must not be because that's how she looks at them.
Right. The other person
is edumacated.
Yeah.
Right. The other person is you know, watching, reading Star magazine and watching Kim Kardashian on TV. I read George Orwell.
That was a great moment and a wonderful character insight into Gilpin's character. It's a great moment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Snowball in the book is like awesome because he disappears. Basically, he gets ostracized and he has to flee for his life into the forest, like a third into the book. And then the rest of the book, he never appears ever again, not even at the end. But Napoleon, the new pig that takes
the
over,
pig, yeah,
uses Snowball as the evil
the enemy.
That's out right. there, out there that we have to watch out for. He's coming back. He's going to get us.
Yeah, and I use that in school all the time. You know, when something happens and nobody knows, like, or fess up, I say, I guess Snowball did it. And at some point in the year, like, I could tell when they've read Animal Farm because somebody will suddenly get it and it's like, oh, now I understand.
Well, I'll be honest, I had to look up the Wikipedia on Animal Farm because it's been a while since sophomore year in high school.
It was actually something because I was freshman year in high school was 83-84, so we read 1984 instead of Animal Farm. So I actually read Animal Farm, I don't know if I was in college or just out of college, and I read it on my own. And
yeah,
I
love
1984, but I like
Animal Farm is a better book. Animal Farm is a better book. I like 1984, but I think Animal Farm is a better book.
Because my problem with 1984, to me, the best part of 1984 is Newspeak. That is a brilliant invention.
The rat cage, dude. That's fucking
sick.
Room 102?
Yeah. The problem with 1984 is that whole middle section of the book, which is, okay, if you were too stupid to understand Animal Farm, we're going to explain the whole thing to
here.
You're just a bull, dude. Shut
and
the hell
Animal
up.
Farm just leaves it all there for you to and trust you to be smart enough to figure it out.
You're a pro. Stop it.
Okay, so going back to this movie.
Yes, yes, sir.
So here we are. Hilary Swank dies. Oh, you know, there's this great moment in the fight that we forgot about, which is that at one point, Betty Gilpin uses the Piper Heitzig champagne. She throws it, and Hilary Swank screams and dives and catches it gently and places it gently back. Because we learned in the very, very, very the second scene of the movie on the airplane, the caviar guy talks about how Athena bought this one bottle that was a bottle of this incredible year of 1984 Piper Heitzig for like this unbelievable.
1984. There you go. That's a.
Oh, was it 1984?
I think it was. Yeah.
Oh, I did not catch that. That's wonderful. And it's super expensive and super amazing. And go on.
No.
So there's this moment when they're I forget if it's, I think it's right after Hillary dies.
jackrabbit.
She sees the other. She sees the hair.
Yes, yes, the jackrabbit. Yes, she turns and there's a jackrabbit. She goes,
Well, the look on her, that's another one of her facial expressions that's priceless. She just like jerks her head back a little bit and is like,
She is the jackrabbit, right? She came to the home and killed the woman.
Oh, that's right. She did. Yeah. I think she's imagining the rabbit. It's not there.
Yes.
Yeah. I think so,
I thought it was real.
Yeah. I think you go either way.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I never thought about it as imaginary. I thought for sure it was real. I mean, they're in a foresty area. I just thought it came stumbling through the house or whatever. The house was wide open by this point.
Well, you know what? Those elitists eat rabbit. So she could have had one ready for the stew.
Dude.
Back so do the redneckers.
Much more likely to be eating
that's
rabbit.
That's true. No, in Paris, dude, I was eating rabbit every other day. I had duck or a rabbit every day when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, that's the French folk. Us French folk.
Those yeah, exactly.
Those people. I'm French, so hey, don't call my people those people.
Send an email
those
to...
People.
Hey, actually, to be honest, a lot of the French people over there don't like Quebecers because they think they're the trashy French. So
what Quebecers.
Yeah.
So then we see the finals. She picks up the champagne. Betty Gilpin's character.
What did she do before that, though?
Oh, go ahead.
That's another thing we forgot to mention during the fight is at one point Hilary Swank picks up
a
clay torch. And uses it as a weapon. And so at the end of the movie, after she's won the fight, she's still bleeding from this wound from the blender blade in her abdomen. And so she bites down on a wooden spoon and uses the creme brulee torch to cauterize the wound.
Yeah, she's badass.
She is badass.
creme brulee is one of the best desserts, too. It's really good.
I love that Phil always has it goes somewhere else with these.
Well, here's a left turn that comes out of nowhere. When I was in Quebec, the woman was trying to explain the desserts.
Jesus Christ.
And one of the desserts she explained was creme brulee. And she goes, I don't know how to say it in English. And I go, oh, it's creme brulee. And she thought that was funny. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
Were we just talking about?
Phil in a nutshell.
Squirrel!
Fair enough, Rick. That's well played. So
she picks up the champagne. Yeah. She goes and she dresses up in this amazing. You know, she obviously goes through Athena's wardrobe and gets this gorgeous, sleek, slinky, black cocktail dress.
Yeah, they basically have the same figure, so they can fit in those dresses for sure.
And she gets was it an Afghan or was it a Borzoi? So it was a very expensive dog. She out of nowhere.
Oh yeah. And then she got the stilettos.
The dog was when she came in, by the way.
Did you notice the stilettos? If you look at the bottom of the stilettos, yes, there's still blood on them.
All on it.
But the very opening, the very first time we see Hilary Swank in the airplane, when she puts her stiletto into the eye of the guy who wakes up too soon, which we never talk
about. That's right. And so the stilettos still have the blood on it. It's kind of funny.
She gets on the plane that brought to the Richies here from the very opening scene. And the stewardess is there, and the captain. And the captain's my good friend, Jim Clark.
Oh, you know him?
Jim. Cool. I've worked with Jim. We've shared popcorn boxes at a premiere of one of my movies. Oh, I didn't mention this. On Amazon Prime, there's a rom-com called It Happened One Valentine's that I have a very unusual role for me, a small supporting role, but a good role, playing editor-in-chief of a Glad rag. Celebrity rag. It's a fun role. It's a really, if you guys like rom-coms, it's a really sweet, very, very sweet rom-com. And Jim Clark sat next to me at the premiere of that. We shared popcorn while we watched that. And then he was the producer on the movie I shot recently. So, yeah, I know Jim.
That's cool.
So anyway, so then they go on, and there's the stewardess who in the beginning saw this horror. And was like, just had no idea what she was in for. And the captain, and she walks on and she goes, oh, they're all, you know, Crystal walks on there. Oh, they're all dead. But I want you to take me home.
You know what though? She, the actress, Hannah Aline that plays that,
her title is flight attendant, not stewardess.
You're right, and I'm very un-PC with that. It should be flight attendant.
Yeah, I guess stewardess.
That fits in perfect with this movie.
So steward and stewardess are now considered bad words? I have no
idea. Oh, yeah, it's been for a long time.
You don't know how old I am, but yes, flight attendant is the correct terminology.
Interesting.
Phil, you're in a world now where actresses don't want to be called actresses.
Yeah, they're actors.
Right.
Yeah. They're all actors. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, they're trying to kill off the female. That's what some people say on Twitter, by the way. Okay. So anyway,
it must be true.
That's right.
is it that the point of this film?
That's why I brought it up.
Earlier. So she goes, "Is that going to be a problem? Take me home. Take me home." Yeah, and Clark goes, no problem at all, man.
They don't seem surprised at all, they're just like, whatever, okay, we'll take you home.
The flight attendant actually seems enthusiastic.
Yes. What's
your opinion of these two people, the flight attendant and the captain, because they've witnessed kidnappings, murders, and all these other things. Are they guilty as well?
Accessories? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely, 100%.
I think so.
Yeah. Accessories before and after the fact.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about the captain. He didn't see what was going on back in the plane when
he knew that these people were being.
Stewardess certainly did. It was her pen.
Flight attendant.
Do airlines work like ships out on the sea? I mean, how does the law work up in the air?
Right. Right. Well, this is a private plane too.
I believe actually the answer to that, Barrett, is yes.
That's what I was wondering. So the captain really is full authority, right? While in flight.
I believe that is true.
Yeah.
So then the stewardess says, you want some champagne, caviar? We got some really nice caviar. And Crystal goes, hey, come sit down and have some caviar with me. Have you had it? No. Well, come down. No, I shouldn't. Why not? What are the rules? Sit down. Have some. And then she takes the bottle of hyperhidsic, Crystal does, and she just starts guzzling it down. And the stewardess says, is that any good? And what does Betty Gilpin say?
It's fucking fantastic.
It's fucking fantastic. And that is the last line of the movie.
Well, and also, after boning up on my Animal Farm, that's could be a parallel to that book because the pigs end up dressing like humans and acting like humans and drinking like humans.
Oh, that's
dresses up in Hillary Swank's clothes and ends up on the airplane drinking her champagne and eating her caviar.
And you know what's so sad about the whole conflict about this film is that nothing looked at the nuance of it. So it just all got wrapped up in what people thought it was about, which is kind of ironic considering what the film was about.
Oh, yeah.
I very much agree with you, Kevin.
This movie got totally fucked.
It did.
Because first it had to be delayed because of a shooting, and then it got released like the Friday before they shut down everything on Monday for the pandemic.
And
nobody saw it.
It upset the anti-gun people in its first attempt to release. It upset the far right in its second release because both of them misunderstood the film.
And then there was the two shootings that happened too.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying because it was the anti-gun people because of the shootings that we can't release the film now. So that's how this happened. It's
right. And then the script leak where they were talking about liberals killing. And they actually used the word deplorable, and that was a charged thing,
because people didn't understand, satire,
right? Well,
people were
they
also
don't anymore.
Watch the movie before they'd seen the fucking movie,
right?
Well, my comedy is dead. You can't do comedy anymore.
Well, this is like
satire.
This is like the parent groups that protested the South Park movie, which made fun of parents who let their kids go see movies that their kids shouldn't have been going to see.
Right.
I mean,
my sister, her kids were like 10. They were playing Grand Theft Auto and blowing people's brains up, beating people with baseball bats, having sex with
pups. What were you doing? What wholesome activities were you doing when you were 10?
I was watching intellectually wonderful modern Scorsese films. There's nothing wrong with modern Scorsese films.
No. He's a gentle lamb of a filmmaker.
That's right. That's art. You were watching The Thing and all that stuff, Mike. That was violent.
Because I'm a sick human being who loves horror and loves all the things that horror says about our society subtly. Without us realizing it.
I don't know that there was anything subtle about this film.
I disagree.
I think
what Barrett said is right. There's nuances to this film.
Yeah.
Now it's overtly. It's very in your face in the way, but underneath what's in your face and out in front is there are a lot of subtle nuances to this film. There are a lot of things that aren't said. That you really need to go in and dissect and think about.
Right. I do want to point out, like, one of the things that this is hitting is because they do mention once or twice Pizzagate in the film. And
yes.
if for some reason you are living a blessed life and completely miss all the bullshit that happens online.
I did. I still have no idea what the
Pizzagate was a thing.
Oh my god!
On the far right, where there was a pizza place in Washington D.C.
Something about molesting children or something.
That said there was a child sex ring operating out of it. And you call up and like if you ordered a, let me get a small pepperoni. It meant you wanted a little Asian boy, you know. But if you wanted a calzone with sausage, you know, it meant something else. Whatever. Well, everything was coded.
Along Hillary was part of it. Hillary Clinton was part of it.
Hillary Clinton was part of it, and Bill Clinton.
The Democrats. Yeah.
And it was all operating out of the basement of this pizza place, which didn't have a basement, or that's what they want you to think. And eventually what happened is some lunatic went there and shot the place up, hoping to save the children. So he was a good-hearted lunatic, but he was still a lunatic.
But that whole story is expanded now, too. It's like all the Democrats and all everyone in Hollywood.
Yeah, people
isn't,
that just
isn't there a lot of babies
in there, too? But Barrett, it's now turned around, and now it's used that all the people on the right are QAnon and believe in this stuff. So it's like back and forth now. Like all Hollywood is pedophiles, and all the right wing are QAnon.
Right, and like the FBI just released that the January 6th thing, by their investigations, is what it looked like, which is a bunch of dumbasses at a rally in a mob. It was not some grand conspiratorial thing to undermine the government over the. They were dumbasses.
I think most people knew that.
You know, again, most people know that there wasn't a child sex ring run by Hillary Clinton operating out of a pizza place in New York City.
Right.
Right. Then we had 3 years of Russian conspiracies, you know, and Ukrainian conspiracies. So people are just stupid. They're just stupid. I hate people.
Going back to the
because people suck.
Exactly. Eric is the smartest person I ever met because that's one stupid. Mike is the second smartest because when I said we should be like the Europeans, and Mike goes, I don't want to be like them either. So Mike and Eric are my
it's one podcast that keep referring to the fact.
Like the Europeans.
Damned with praise.
Yeah. I don't remember what country they were talking about, whether it's Switzerland or Sweden, where they said, like, if you ask the average person, they don't know who their president is. And I could kind of want to that I might not have a problem with. You know, where the president is so unimportant in your life, you don't care who it is. Yeah. And it is not a shot at Biden. It is not a shot at Trump. It is a shot at the institution in general that has become way more important than it was ever intended to be.
And yet less because of the bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Industrial military complex.
Which is what the movie is about.
Yeah.
It sure is.
So, yeah, I mean, and there's all this, but it is about, like, the normal people stuck in the middle. That's part of it anyway. I'm stuck on either side. I do like how the rabbit and the hare thing both ties into the end, but also goes back and explains, like, her, you know, backing over the guy. Right, because you know it wasn't enough that the rabbit came back; he had to kill the children too.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Well, in the end, there's absolutely zero question that she is the jackrabbit.
Oh yeah, and that not only, and the jackrabbit eats the turtles, the box turtles dinner. And of course, she eats the grilled cheese. She not
and
only
she
eats
the grilled cheese and she eats the caviar. She drinks the champagne.
Drinks the champagne, wears the dress, wears the shoes, flies
takes
the plane,
the
walks the dog, takes the glasses. Everything that is hers is hers now.
I don't think she's becoming Hilary Swank's character.
She's taking
saying,
it.
Fuck you.
Yeah, that's it. And that's exactly what it is. She is saying fuck you to Hilary Swank's character, to Athena, because she is taking everything that was hers. It is a vengeance unleashed, really, you know, and complete and total, not just burn down the house, but salt the earth, you know, and make sure nothing goes there again.
Yes, I think that's correct.
And I do think they do a really good job throughout the film of showing you how smart the character is. It helps when pretty much the rest of the film is filled with dumbasses.
Right, and the Croatians don't want us over there. Get out of here.
Yeah. But
yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. So
it's one of my more perfect movies that I like. I mean,
I have to agree with you, Barrett. As I said, I rarely watch a movie more than once, and this one I was thrilled to watch it a second time.
I have watched it 4 times at this point.
Wow. Yeah, I've seen it about that many too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not saying this is the greatest film ever, but any film that says "fuck you" to the assholes out there, I'm on board.
Well, here's the thing: it's not just that it's a good movie. And you know, somebody made that point, right? There's really good movies, and then there's movies that are really rewatchable. You know, like, you know, you can pick there's like great movies. You know, Citizen Kane's a great movie, but Ferris Bueller's Day Off is way more watchable.
I've watched Citizen Kane about 12 times.
Watched it many times myself.
You can't do this to me. I'm Charles Foster Kane. Sorry.
But the point is, this is not only a good movie, it is a very watchable movie. It is 90 minutes, so it's a tight film. It is a lot of fun. And, you know, it is a sharp satire. And the people who are mostly going to be upset by it are the people that take themselves way too seriously or are not well tethered into reality.
Michael, you summed that up very nicely.
Yep.
But that's the problem, Mike. All you have to do is go on social media and they all take themselves too much seriously. It's just ridiculous. So that's everybody. So everybody hates this film then.
And the truth is, you know, we also look down on people because they believe this or that. And yet there's a lot of people out there that believe stupid things. But it is, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing you can find someone who is absolutely freaking brilliant. And yet they will believe stupid shit at the same time.
I very much agree.
They could be like the founder of a Fortune 500 company. They could be like, was it Elon Musk who thinks that we're all living in a computer simulation?
Yeah.
You know, or that they believe, you know.
Well, yeah. I hope so, because if it isn't a computer simulation, then this world sucks.
Then I wonder who the hell are the NPCs.
To bring an example close to home of what Mike is saying, my father is not a dummy. He is a professor at Rice University, okay?
Don't get him canceled. Be careful.
But I seriously, this happened like 15 years ago, but I'm never going to let him live it down. We actually got into an extended argument once because he was claiming that you had better odds of winning the lottery if fewer people played it. And I was like, well, no, Dad, that's not how that works.
Well,
you
not
have
that
the same odds of picking the winning number, no matter how many people are playing.
Yeah.
He's like, but if more people are playing, then there's more likely to have another person get the same number. I was like, well, okay, that's true, but your odds of picking the correct number are still the same. And he would not give it up. We had this argument for like 50. I'm like, I finally walked away. I was like, I can't even deal with this.
And your father still thinks he's right.
Well, there was somebody I had, and it's weird because I just saw a comedian, like a clip on YouTube, and he like one of the things
what's a comedian?
and I don't remember who it, I don't remember who he is, and I'm sorry I can't remember who it is, but like he's going like saying like things that people that he had respect for that he just immediately lost their respect when he heard the thing that came out of their mouth, and one of them was like a woman that he knew that he saw a turkey and said, "I've never seen a male chicken before."
Mike, what's a Hitchcock?
Oh, yeah, but that one at least I can say, you know, there was a 15-year-old kid with a guy who hadn't made a movie, you know, in twice the kid's lifetime, right? You know, yeah. So. You know, that's just a knowledge gap. That's not a thing that's a common occurrence. That's you know, but yeah. Oh my God, some people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense, Mike. That makes sense.
Because,
when I was a kid, everybody knew who Ted Williams was. That was in Boston. But if you ask a kid in Boston nowadays, "Hey, Ted Williams, who's Ted Williams?"
Yeah,
because it is a time gap now. Yeah, it's a fair point.
Or nobody cares about baseball.
Yeah, but it's Ted Williams.
Because baseball's horrible and boring.
Agreed. Most boring sport ever, aside from golf.
See, I have
takes a certain intellect to be able to appreciate it.
I have to be,
no, it doesn't.
I have to be the in-between here because I follow both baseball and football, so I have to try to keep the peace.
Yeah, but you play football with the cheat mode on.
No, that's fine. That's all right.
That was a Patriots crack, Phil.
Oh, fuck you.
You had to have it explained to you, and then you tell him, "Fuck you."
Mike doesn't even follow football, but he knows the Patriots are horrible cheaters.
What the hell? That's that. Hey, hate is as Taylor Swift sings. Hate is a gonna hate.
Sometimes hate is justified.
Sometimes it's perfectly fine to hate cheaters.
All right, I think we're done talking about this movie, right?
Yeah,
I think we pretty much hit everything.
Yeah.
I think the host at this point should probably say something about summing up.
Yeah,
let's do that. All right, so we can do that. Before we give our final thoughts, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan because you're a podcast fool.
I am both of those things. it's a general interest podcast called the Ascancy Podcast. That's spelled ASKANCITY. You can get it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric are doing another podcast on the side that we got to discuss what day we're going to read.
Yeah, we would have done it last night if Phil wasn't such a goddamn loser.
I was in Canada. I was on the border.
Like, the movie's been out since 1997.
Damn Canadians.
Damn Americans, Canadians. Anyway, what is that podcast, Mike?
Cinema a la carte. It's a podcast where we talk about things that are not necessarily dark discussions, compatible or friendly, or maybe are borderline. I think the film that we're going to be covering at some point in the near future, perhaps,
almost became a dark discussion.
It's certainly a thing that could almost fit into a dark discussions, but it also fits just as well out of dark discussions.
Indeed.
But like I said, it's we've reviewed science fiction films and mysteries and dramas and action films and pretty much
thrillers.
And stuff that have
dramas
and stuff with Tom Cruise. So. Yes, and even animated films. So all that's available.
If you're going to ask Mike to do this, you got to let him do it.
No, he doesn't. He has to interrupt all the time. So that's there if you'd like to check it out. And we've got another film coming out soon, which we mentioned earlier in the podcast, if you were paying attention. We didn't tell you there was going to be a quiz at the end, but here it is. Hopefully you can join us for that.
So what film is that, Michael?
Oh.
Apparently, anyway, Dan wasn't paying attention.
I don't actually know if we mentioned it by name. Did we mention it by name?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, we did.
Eric, Mike, I don't interrupt. I interject.
No, you interrupt.
Yeah, I do. But
this is
except on the movie The Old. I didn't say anything in that film.
No, you said nothing at all.
You're too busy yelling at your kids.
Yeah, and I had that.
Yeah.
And
go to bed! It's like, God, I wish they would start aging a year for every 30 minutes right now.
Barrett, you and various random co-hosts do another podcast, and we actually recorded an episode about a movie that Mick Cage is in that's coming out soon.
Yes, Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. We recently recorded a review of Pig with Nicolas Cage. And that's not sure when that's coming out. That's for you to say. And we
hopefully
do have
next week, actually.
Next week? Okay, cool. And we do have other things lined up. You had sent me a screener that we might possibly do. Well, you didn't send me a screener, but told me the trailer, and the trailer looked pretty good. So,
yeah, I'll send you that screener. Yeah, and we'll discuss. I'll text you tomorrow at work, and we'll discuss when we want to record it. So that's good. Yep, look for that podcast as well. And Deanna, you do things. What other things do you do?
I do things. I'm always auditioning. I've got, as I mentioned, I've got a couple of films that should be coming out pretty soon. The Right Mom should be probably out on. Within a few months, I would guess, will be out on either Lifetime or one of those similar Hallmark Channel, one of those, because it's that kind of a story. It's a lovely story. First Oscar should be coming out, I hope, real soon. That's on a Russian timeline, so who knows. Warrior Soul will be out in 2022, according to Adam. I'm auditioning all the time. I'm producing a couple of films or trying to produce. It's very difficult in this environment. A couple of films written by Gregory Norris and one by Gregory Norris and Edwin Burney. One's a murder mystery thriller and the other is a straight up horror anthology. So, just always trying to get something done in this crazy times.
Indeed. And folks can follow Dan on Twitter. What's that, your Twitter handle there?
It's Dan Lench, I think. It's either Dan Lench or Daniel Lench. L-E-N-C-H is how I spell my last name. You can follow me on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. I'm easy to find.
Excellent. All right. So before we give our final thoughts, once again, we're www.darkdiscussions.com. Email is darkdiscussions@AOL.com. Facebook group is Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. And you can also email us directly through the website, through the Contact Us menu option. And the website is updated daily with news articles, reviews, podcasts, release notices, video reviews that we link to off of YouTube that Eric does, part of his Eric's movie
Corner.
Thank you, Corner. That's the word I was missing. Make sure you check out the website, darkdiscussions.com, daily, because it's always updated with news about movies and pop culture. So let's give our final thoughts on this film here, The Hunt, and we'll start with you, Dan.
This was a delight from the very get-go. From the second it started, I was hooked. And as it progressed, I enjoyed it more and more. I found it to be satirical, funny, horrific, wonderful, brilliant, incredible fight scenes, incredible cinematography, incredible performances, especially by Betty Gilpin. Just a surprise around every corner. So many twists and turns that were brilliantly done. It's one of the few films I watched twice in a row because I enjoyed it that much. So I highly recommend this film. If you can handle the satire and if you can handle the blood, guts, and gore.
Sounds good. Eric?
That's pretty much everything I had to say. So I'll just go ditto what Dan said.
All right. For me, I'll do ditto cubed. Cubed.
Can you cube a ditto? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess so. Barrett.
Yeah, I love this film and everything Dan said, I agree with. It's a great film. Watch it if you can handle blood and guts and satire.
All right. There's a quad ditto. And we got to, Mike.
Yeah, so it's a tremendously fun film. I know it was on my top 10 list last year, and again, I'll put in the caveat for, like Barrett did, for violence. I know there's some people that don't like violence, but putting the violence aside, if this is a movie that whose politics offends you, then you are probably the kind of person it is making fun of. And maybe some self-examination is in order.
Oh, well said.
Well said.
Absolutely. All right, sounds good. So once again, this is the film The Hunt, 2020 film. Now available on HBO Max at the time of this recording, which again is August 26, 2021. Mixed reviews by critics and viewers alike. However, folks who probably would listen to our Dark Discussions podcast would probably like this film a lot. And so with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out? Oh, no, hold on. Dan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's always such a pleasure. I'm always so excited when you invite me to join you. It is such a pleasure, intelligently and sometimes not so intelligently discussing films in such depth. You guys are the shit.
You know, you've had a good career as a paralegal, right?
And that's true.
And you know, you have a lovely daughter who's helping you in your acting career. You've won accolades as an actor and stage and on screen. And you know, you have now directed and something, you're producing things, and you're excited to be on a podcast. I really think you need to re-examine your life as well.
Well played, Mike. That was awesome.
Do I owe you $20 for that, Mike? Because I think I might.
No, I mean it's just I don't know. It's so bizarre to me. But anyway.
Well, you know what? It's literally, you know, if you probably want to end this thing soon, so in the Mutual Affirmation Society. But I got to say, you know, from the moment you guys found me in Circle and the moment I found you because of Circle, it's just been such a pleasure to chat with you and discuss films. So y'all are great.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, and we got to get you back on soon. So we'll throw out some ideas for you, we'll have you back. So
you know, I'm always willing.
Excellent. And with that, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about The Hunt. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.